There's an interesting question that I frequently face when I'm talking to people that I work with. And as many of you know, as I've mentioned before, I work with a lot of younger people. Not all of them are young enough to be my children, but enough of them. It occasionally makes me feel old, but that's neither here nor there. And what it comes down to is what we're trying to address in the sermon today, and with the sermon title, which is simply the question, is contentment settling? And one of the things that young people seem to be concerned about is, or at least lots of them are concerned about, is they don't want to settle. And what they mean by this is that they don't want to take sort of the first option and say, well, this is okay, and then never go any further than that. And I think we're all in favor of that. I mean, this whole notion of just sort of taking the easy way out, of settling for the bare minimum, is not something that any of us are willing to put up with, I think, at least not most of the time. But somehow equating contentment with settling is a young person's disease for the most part, although I think other people might occasionally suffer from it as well. And the short answer to the sermon title is no. It's not settling, and I have been preaching a little bit longer lately, so I was tempted to just leave it at no and be done, but I don't think that's really accomplishing what we're going to do or what we're trying to do. And instead, I want us to look at what it means to be content, particularly coming out of our epistle reading today, where Paul is writing to another young person, writing to Timothy. We don't really know how old Timothy is, other than he's definitely younger than Paul. And he's giving him some advice, as he does through both of his letters. But in this particular case, what he's talking about is things that I think have real value for us as well. Because contentment is one of those tricky things. There are lots of things that we do that only we can assess what's actually going on because we're on the inside. From the outside, contentment and settling can look exactly the same. And that's just one of the things we have to live with. One of my favorite sociologists, Peter Berger, talks about how one of the difficulties of sort of assessing the world is that from the outside, cynicism and a realistic assessment of what's going on are often identical in how they look. It's your inner motivation that changes things from a compassionate observer of the human condition and a cynic, which we don't want to do either. And so when we think about contentment and settling, we need to understand what's actually happening. Because when we look at what Paul is talking about, he says, godliness with contentment is great gain. And it reminds us we brought nothing into the world and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. And what people often stop there, and they just think, well, that's a pretty minimalistic view of the world, that if you have enough to eat and you have clothes on your back, that's it. You shouldn't even aspire to anything better. You should just be okay with that. Because if that's the case, then why on earth would we ever work to alleviate poverty? It doesn't say that you have, you know, all that you want to eat or even enough clothes. It just says if you have food and clothing, you should be fine. Except that's not what Paul's saying at all, particularly when we continue on, because he's equating that mentality of saying that let's look at what the requirements of life are, food and clothing, which are basically stand-in symbols for all the rest of the things that we have to have a functional life. And he's comparing that with people who want to get rich, fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. And then one of the most misquoted parts of the Bible, for the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Money is not the root of evil, which is how most people remember this. Money is money. That's like saying stones are the root of evil, or trees, or any other thing that we can then use as a tool. No, the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people eager for money have even wandered from the faith and become filled with grief because of the decisions they've made. Contentment is not so much a matter of just saying, okay, what's the bare minimum I need? And as long as I have that, nothing else matters. Contentment instead is an assessment of what we have and saying, is this sufficient for us to do what we have been called to do? And is it sufficient for us to live lives of rich fullness? And money doesn't really enter into that at all. Because when you talk to people who are content, who self-identify as content, they hardly ever talk about bank accounts. They talk about other things. Contentment comes for most people once that bare minimum has been made of food and clothing and shelter and that. Contentment comes from raising children who are making a difference. That's one that often shows up to people who are self-identified as content or who radiate that sense of contentment. You ask, what does that for you? And often it's that they worked really hard in the process of raising children, which we all know is not easy. Whether you have children or not, you know that's not easy. And to see them, depending on their age, beginning that process of independence, beginning that process of contributing to society in valuable ways, whatever that is a opportunity for us to experience this deep contentment that has nothing to do with money. It has nothing to do with possessions. It's more about those intangibles of life. And we're not settling, because this whole idea that somehow we can figure out what it is that we need once for all and just say, this is it, and then not even concern ourselves anymore beyond that. Well, it's sort of a theoretical position. Nobody ever lives that way, so I'm not quite sure why we even bring it into the conversation. What we're concerned, what we're thinking more about here is people who have settled are those who have stopped. If you've settled with where you are, it means you're not interested in growing anymore. Settling is this whole mentality that says, well, this is all there is, so I'm not even going to think about anything else. Not a pleasant place to be. Contentment, on the other hand, says that what I have is sufficient for all that I need, that I can continue to grow from this position. People who are chronically discontented are the kind of people who simply spend, as much as anything, all of their time looking at what they don't have rather than what they do. And if you ever are feeling discontent, and we all do now and then, one of the best things to do, at least one of the things that I've found very helpful, is to just walk around your house and look at things that make you happy. And there's a lot in there. And sometimes there are things, you know, sometimes it's, you know, you've got a new computer, you've got whatever it is, like it's a physical thing that makes you happy, and that's great. You should be happy about those things that God has provided for you. But often what it is, it's pictures. It's these possessions that the value isn't in the possession itself. It's the memories that they trigger. When I look at the teacups in my house, we have a few teacups. We don't drink tea out of them. We don't really do anything out of them. But every time I look at them, they remind me of my mother. And all the good memories of my growing up come in when I see that. It's a sign of it's a trigger of contentment for me. It has nothing to do with money. And when we start looking at people who are so concerned that they're just going to settle, if you ask them enough questions and they're open to responding to them, what you often find is that people who are worried about settling are just consumed with fear. Content people aren't afraid people. Contentment seems to sort of push fear out the door. Because when you're content with what you've got, when you look at the possessions you have, the relationships you have, the resources you have, and you say, these are sufficient for what I need to do. These are sufficient for me to have a life that is not miserable. And it's even more than that, to have a fulfilling life. What it's reminding you of as much as anything is that you have a connection with God who is going to take care of you. Because one of the things that goes through this entire passage that was read for us is this ongoing reminder that contentment comes with godliness, or godliness with contentment. You put the two together and great things happen. It's hard for you to be content if all of the good things in your life are your sole responsibility. It's hard to be content, I would think, That if you knew at the back of your mind that if for some reason you lost your job, you'd lost everything. Well, people who have that relationship with God that we do, who are connected with God in a meaningful way through Jesus and have the Holy Spirit living within us, know full well that our job, the money coming in, isn't what makes us content. It's not in the sum of our possessions that we find our value. Because we look at possessions not for their extrinsic value, but for their intrinsic value, for what they let us do. We have money because it allows us to do things, to buy gas, to put in our car so we can go to where we need to go. So we can buy food so we can eat food, hopefully enjoy it, and continue on. We look at these things as the tools that we need to do what it is that God has called us to do. And if we have enough of those tools, contentment is a lot easier. But if we look at the tools as an end in and of themselves, then it's really hard to know when you have enough. If money is the value, not the amount of money, but money itself, what's enough? Well, enough is more. And living in the land where what you need is more is every bit as demoralizing and depressing as spending your entire life wanting something else. Because it's never there. You can't find it. What Paul is saying to Timothy and to us is that, look, pay attention to what you have. Look at what you've got and see if it is sufficient for who you are and what you're called to do. And if it's sufficient, then contentment should follow. But if you love not what you're called to do, and if you don't love the process of becoming that person that you were created to be, that takes a lifetime for us to achieve, then it's not too surprising that you're going to fall into this idea that money solves problems. Money never solves problems. It's a tool to be part of problem solving. But if money solved all your problems, we wouldn't have any depressed billionaires. And we have a lot of them, so I've been told. If money solved problems, if wealth was the solution to the problems, like the beginning and the end of the solution to the problems, the wealthiest countries in the world would have the fewest problems. And I don't think that's the case. And if the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, well, we don't even really have to talk about that a lot. We all know people who have that, I don't know, with the love of money or what it is. Oscar Wilde, who said a cynic is the one who knows the price of everything and the value of nothing. Oscar Wilde was, I mean, I wouldn't want to base my life on most of his. But he really got a hold of some things. And that is one that is so important for us. Is because it's getting at what's going on here. If you're someone who is consumed with that love of money, you know how much everything costs. But you don't know what anything is worth. And if you don't know what things are worth, if you don't know the value of your things, you will never be content. When I look at the things in my life, like the physical things, cars and houses and furniture and all those things, when I look at those not for how good or how bad they are, or how much they cost or how little they cost, or if I look at them solely in relation to someone else's possession, I'm probably going to be unhappy. One way or the other, I'm either going to be envious or I'm going to feel superior, which doesn't make me happy either. But if I look at all of those things as reminders of a loving God who has provided sufficient things for me to accomplish what I need to do. Our house is too small. We're hoping to get a larger one at some point. Our house is too small, and anybody who's ever been in it goes, yeah, you're right, your house is too small. But it's a house. It's a house in which we can hear Eli laughing a lot. And when Sam comes over, I have laughing grandchildren in my house. If you offered me a really big house and said you can't ever have your grandchildren here, I'd laugh at you. Because what makes my life worth living is my grandchildren, is the people in my life. The things are tools to make things better for the people, not the other way around. I'm content with the house I have. Does that mean that I'm not keeping my eyes open for other opportunities? No, it doesn't mean that at all. Contentment doesn't mean that you've somehow hit a plateau and nothing ever changes. It means that you're not being kept awake at night because of what you don't have. That's a terrible way to live. And if you're someone who actually is in that situation, we have a responsibility to do something about it. If you've convinced yourself that you're in that situation when you're not, then you have something to do about it in conversation with God. We can't help you with that because now we're back into this love of money thing. And that's an internal deal that we can't really help you with. When I think about contentment and settling, I'm often reminded of what I was like as a younger person. Because we have to be careful. We sometimes think that not being greedy is sufficient to be content. And going back to that whole, what I said before about how often from the outside you can't tell what's actually going on. When I was a younger person, I might have appeared to be content because I had the things I wanted and I didn't talk a lot about wanting other sorts of things. But I wasn't content. I had settled for what I had because I felt not mentally healthy, really, at that time, going through some issues. I had felt this is as much as I could possibly ever manage, and this is just going to be my life forever. And so what looked like contentment was actually settling, and my response to your stuff wasn't that I wasn't envious of it, it's that I despised you to such an extent that I couldn't imagine wanting anything you had. Content? No. Not even a little bit. As I got older, as I began to understand who I was, and then as I had this connection with God within me, as I responded to God's reaching out to me, I began to realize that no, the fact that I didn't want your stuff didn't mean that I was content. In my case, it just meant I was a really unhappy person. And now when I don't want your stuff, it's because what I have is sufficient. It doesn't mean that I don't look at someone else's car and think, well, I'd get more room or be more comfortable, maybe it gets better gas mileage, that would be nice. You can say those things and still be content. It's when you find yourself grinding your teeth at other people's possessions. When you find yourself beating yourself up because of what you don't have when what you have is sufficient. That's when you're running a risk. And that's when you begin to realize you're not content. And if the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, I'm beginning to think as I get older and as I just look at my own life, that discontentment and godliness are very hard to manage at the same time. The discontentment tends to push godliness out the window. Because one of the things that discontentment says is that God hasn't given me enough. And if God hasn't given me enough, there's a couple of reasons why that I can think of right away. And one is that I'm not worth it, which is wrong, or that God doesn't love me, which is wrong. And as soon as you start having wrong ideas about God, it's hard to be godly because you don't want to have that connection. Discontentment and godliness don't go together. Godliness with contentment is a great gain, as Paul said. We're often called in the Christian life to do part of what needs to be done. Like we can't save ourselves. We all know that. We can't force God to do a lot of things, but we can respond when God reaches to us. That's our part. It's a both end. God won't save us when we tell him to go away either. But it's the both end. And we can work towards contentment by reminding ourselves that God loves us, that God has promised to care for us, that God's love for us is not expressed solely in the things of our lives. And we can appreciate what they are and how they've come to us. We can appreciate what we can do with them. And we can look at them as sufficient, which begins that process of contentment. We can do some work there.
But we also need to open ourselves up to God, to open ourselves to correction if we need it, but we also need to ask God to demonstrate to us in ways that we can't ignore how much He loves us. And that's another part of contentment. Knowing that you will be cared for by a loving God, no matter what, is another part of contentment. And that one has absolutely nothing to do with settling, but it's more about just knowing who we are and who God is. So is contentment settling? No, it's not. It might look like it sometimes from the outside, but what things look like from the outside are of minimal importance compared to the reality within. Maybe today would be a good day for each of us. In the turn of the season, as we're moving into fall, as we're getting ready for Thanksgiving even, to spend maybe just a minute or two thinking again about what it is that we have, what it lets us do, and how a loving God has not left us in the lurch with insufficient resources to do what He's called us to do. And I think if we do that, we'll be well on the road to contentment. Amen.